This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 25th of October 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 25th of October. Your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Steve Russell. The main headlines this week are Cathedral Hopes hosts charity's 15-year celebration, Air Ambulance flies to its 20,000th milestone, and residents teed off with golf club plan. So now, may we have the first headline, please, Heather.
Cathedral hosts charity's 15-year celebration. Imerys Hampshire celebrates, by Christopher Atkinson. Imerys Hampshire has celebrated 15 years since its founding with a service at Winchester Cathedral. Taking place on Friday, October the 18th, in the Cathedral Choir, approximately 250 guests attended, including Winchester MP Danny Chambers and the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon-Smith. The service celebrated the charity's success in rebuilding the lives of its formerly homeless residents, who the charity refers to as companions, along with its sustainability and contribution to the city, past, present and future. Alison Thompson, MBE, founder of Imerys Hampshire, spoke about the charity's foundation. She said, "It is a joy to welcome so many of you here today who helped to make our Imerys community a reality. 10 years in the making and 15 years of success, it is indeed something to celebrate." The service was led by the Reverend Canon Roland Ream, Vice Dean and Canon Chancellor, in the company of the Deputy Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Surgeon Rear Admiral, I beg your pardon, Lionel Jarvis. Nigel Samuels, Chief Executive of Imerys Hampshire, also spoke at the service, discussing the next steps the charity is hoping to take and its work in licensing out a carbon calculator it had developed. He said, "I think the message is that if you provide hope and structure and trust homeless people, they can solve their own problems. We have proved over the last 15 years that a number of our companions can go back to independent living, and a number of our existing companions are doing great work. The fact that a companion can build and license a product which generates hundreds of thousands of pounds, like the carbon calculator, is quite remarkable. In fact, our companions open up shops every day and are trusted to do that and run the operations, which are quite remarkable." He continued, "I'm very proud and I'm very humbled by Imerys' success. I'm humbled by the support we get from the Winchester and Hampshire communities, and I think it will continue to be very successful because of the skills and compassion of the companions who live and work with us. Imerys Hampshire is now working towards creating a well-being charity for companions to use, with the charity needing to raise £50,000 to complete the funding for a proposed launch next summer. The service was followed by a reception in the North Transept in the company of Imerys United Kingdom President Sir Terry Waite, with music provided by Cord Electra, who also played at intervals during the service." Cord Electra is a three-piece string group, and there's also a woman walking down in an elegant black dress at a fashion show, and there's also a picture of Alison Thompson, who founded our Imerys, speaking at this service.
Air Ambulance flies to its 20,000th milestone. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance has responded to its 20,000th mission since its first flight in 2007. The life-saving charity responded to mission number 20,000 on Wednesday, October the 16th, when the paramedic and doctor team responded to an incident in Winchester late at night. The critical care team attended the incident via one of its emergency response vehicles and provided treatment to a patient who was taken to hospital by road ambulance. This comes as the specialist doctors, dispatchers, pilots and paramedics have responded to almost 2,000 call-outs this year, already surpassing the total for the entirety of 2023, an increase of almost 40% in the same period as last year. July has had the most call-outs for the charity, 249 so far this year, the most the service has had in a single month on record. The majority of incidents involving cardiac arrest, road traffic collisions, and medical emergencies such as seizures. Other cases included falls from height, assaults, and sporting incidents. One of these 20,000 deployments was to 81-year-old Utrecht Caseborn, who sustained life-threatening injuries when he was involved in a road traffic collision on the A31 in October 2023. His daughter, Jo, said, "I was left a voicemail from the emergency department at 3:20 a.m. telling me Dad was there. When I arrived, they told me he was unlikely to make it and said it was time to say goodbye. It's so surreal that he was so well now. I was looking at funeral arrangements, hospices, end-of-life care, and now we're having breakfast together. Nobody knows when they're going to need the services of Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance. It's an absolute lifeline for the patient and the family, often in extreme circumstances." The charity's CEO, Richard Corbett, said, "We're currently charting at around 40% increase on the same period as last year. That's an enormous increase in pressure on our crews to perform more highly skilled life-saving procedures in extremely testing settings. It's also pressure on our charity team and our supporters to ensure we can raise enough money to keep the aircraft flying, meet the increased need for drugs, equipment, and engineering support. We are extremely grateful to everyone who contributes to back our cause and give our patients the best chance of survival and recovery." The charity recently launched Operation Airbase, a £3.6 million appeal to relocate its airbase in Southampton, near Southampton Airport, to dramatically reduce response times.
And here we have residents teed off with golf club plan. Fears over increased HGVs through villages. The battle lines are being drawn over plans that would increase the number of lorries on a narrow main road through a nearby village. Scores of people in Twyford and Coldon Common are objecting to a plan which would see more traffic on the B3335 for at least 3 years. Villagers fear it would mean an extra 50 HGVs a day going from the course. Hockley Golf Club has applied to the South Downs National Park Authority, the SDNPA, for permission to develop a sustainable irrigation system. That will involve the transportation of 130,000 cubic metres of spoil to the 18-hole golf course to create the irrigation system, with the preliminary plans calling for the trucks to drive on a route through Twyford and Coldon Common. Residents of both Twyford and Coldon Common are concerned about the impact the plans will have on the environment and traffic, with the South Downs National Park Authority receiving 33 letters of objection. Wayne Lawton, chairman of Twyford Parish Council's Planning Committee, told the Chronicle that the Parish Council had objected. "The Planning Committee has raised concerns about the traffic and the volume of lorries heading through the village. There are other issues regarding the archaeology and the environment as well." The Parish Council objection states that it is concerned that the plans will cause harm to the natural beauty of the South Downs National Park and will cause harm to Twyford with the additional lorry traffic. Vicky Dunlop of Twyford High Street has told planners, "My family has lived in Twyford for nearly 30 years and we've already noticed a dramatic increase of traffic in the last 5 years to make it harder and harder to get out of our drive onto the main road. Quite often we need to stick our car nose out in order for the traffic to stop to let us out. There used to be a gap, but not anymore." Unfortunately, road users do not keep to the 30-mile speed limit as they pass our drive, in spite of local speed watch volunteers. There will be another accident soon at this end of the village, which will not be helped by lorry movement from Hockley Golf Club. Neil Penfield of Northfield said that while the golf club's desire for a sustainable irrigation system is understandable, the detrimental carbon footprint of its construction will involve approximately 110,000 additional individual diesel truck tipper movements over a 3-year minimum period. There have been 82 letters of support from a wide geographical area. Chris Kilgannon, club general manager, in a statement said, "The rainwater catchment scheme at the Hockley Golf Club is an environmentally significant project that seeks to enhance stable sustainability by replacing the use of potable water with captured rainwater for course irrigation. This initiative, endorsed by both England Golf and Hampshire Golf, addresses critical issues tied to climate change and water conservation. By conserving potable water for the growing local population and improving the biodiversity of the golf course, this project holds regional importance. Hockley Golf Club have engaged professional transport consultants to inform the planning application. As part of the proposal, the club have met several times with Twyford Parish Council and have committed to implementing a traffic routing plan for construction traffic. This will ensure that all trucks arrive at the golf club via junction 11 of the M3, therefore thereby avoiding travelling through the village of Twyford. Only empty trucks leaving our site to development projects in Fair Oak, Bishop's Waltham and Botley areas would travel through Twyford. All trucks leaving to other destinations would depart via the motorway. Hampshire Highways have been consulted on our planning application and have no objection to the proposal, subject to conditions." And for full details of the application, you can see the South Downs National Park website, reference SDNP24026 FUL, and this is accompanied by a little picture of one of the house little white cottages in Twyford Road, which is right on the road, and there's a large white van squashed up right next to its windows with a huge grey lorry attempting to get through in the other direction.
That concludes the headlines, and now we continue with the death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, First Person and Belgarum. So now, the death notices. Ashenden. Margaret Joan passed away peacefully at home on the 3rd of October, 84 years. Constable. Priscilla Ruth Constable. Sadly passed away on the 16th of September, aged 80. Coombs, Dory Joan Coombs, née Bailey, sadly passed away on September the 21st, aged 91. Goodyear, Patricia Margaret Trish Goodyear, passed away peacefully at home Friday the 4th of October, aged 91. Elaine Granger, after fighting valiantly against cancer since March, Elaine died peacefully on 5th of October with all her family at her side. Miller, Patricia Ann Pat Miller, sadly passed away at home on 2nd of October, aged 76. Nan, Major James Kemp Nan, late Seaforth Highlanders, died peacefully at home in Winchester on the 13th of October, aged 100 years. That concludes the death notices this week.
Christian comment. Some readings are all too human stories. Sometimes, writes Moira Redmond, Bible readings can seem alien, showing us a different world, one that is hard to imagine. Other times the stories are all too human, and despite the gap of 2,000 years, we can smile at what happens in the Gospel and also learn from it. In the readings at church last Sunday, we had the story of the apostles James and John asking Jesus if they could have special, high-ranking places in heaven. Allow us to sit one at your right hand and the other at your left in all your glory. Mark chapter 10. They get extremely short shrift from Jesus. You do not know what you are asking. And then their fellow apostles get antsy. They began to feel indignant with James and John, and Jesus has to take a stern line with all of them, and says, "Anyone who wants to become great among you must be your servant, and anyone who wants to be first among you must be slave to all. For the Son of Man himself did not come to be served, but to serve." I love this story. First of all, because it's so recognisable. Haven't we all known that situation among a group of people working together? We have a tendency to admire our own contribution and hope everyone else has noticed it too. We want to be best friends with the important people, and it can be embarrassing to be knocked back. But the deeper message is valuable too, as it shows an important difference in viewpoints. In the secular world, there's a clear progression. The more successful and important you are, the more other people will kowtow to you, will do your bidding and try to make you comfortable. You can demand service. You can pay for everything. You can buy yourself out of trouble. Looked at glancingly, that's an attractive idea. But it can get uncomfortable. And it does not match up with that very basic belief that we are all created equal. So it is actually a relief to retreat into Christianity and find that the more you have, the more you should be giving away. The more you succeed, the more you should be looking after other people. The more power you get, the more you should look to serve others. Pope Francis has nominated a theme for next year: Pilgrims of Hope. He wants 2025, a jubilee year, as are all years ending in 25, to be a year of hope for a world suffering the impacts of war, the ongoing effects of COVID-19 pandemic and the climate crisis. It is a lot to deal with, and sometimes hope is hard to find. But Christianity can give us the tools to look for it. And serving others is an important factor in that. We know this. Anyone who does help others always reports back that they gained far more than they gave. They learned from the people they helped. They felt more at peace within themselves. Sometimes it's just a question of getting started, of putting aside the temptations of the world and thinking about what is important and what we have to offer other people. We have so much to gain as pilgrims of hope. Moira Redmond.
Right, now we move on to letters to the editor.
Yes, the first one is from Mrs. P. Dollery with a heading, Incompetent. I like this. I want to bring to everyone's attention the incompetence of Winchester City Council in dealing with problems. During the summer, I had a new door fitted at my flat. It seemed fine, but it was very sticky. When I went out, I couldn't open the door because it was glued tight. I had to get a neighbour to come and force it open to get me out. The firm that fitted it were very good, came back, washed it and checked it was okay, so it was passed. A few weeks after, the council phoned me to say they were putting in another door. This was done, and it was fine. Then, out of the blue, the council phoned me again to say they were putting on another door. I explained I already had another door, but she insisted that I had to have it and it would be done on October the 9th. On October the 9th, I phoned the council to find the time they were coming and was told nothing was booked. I said, "But you insisted I had it even though it wasn't needed." She said, "It's not booked here." 20 minutes after, a man rang my doorbell and lo and behold, said, "I have a new door for you." By this time, I'm having a mental breakdown. I explained what happened. He checked the door, said it was fine, and left. I suppose all this rigmarole with the council will no doubt be passing the costs on to me. We have to pay for anyone dumping goods on our patch, even though they don't live here. We have to foot the bill. We have complained about this, but it falls on deaf ears. Can we trust this council with our hard-earned money, or are they incapable of our trust? Is there something wrong with this council's admin? No wonder they are in debt. So much money is wasted. Mrs. P. Dollery, Winnall Manor Road, Winnall. The City Council responded, "We're sorry for any inconvenience caused and any miscommunication for Mrs. Dollery when replacing her door. However, we are in touch directly so we can understand her concerns firsthand."
And Marvin B. Naylor writes, "No toilets agony." Rather a difficult one. "As a 62-year-old man, I find it extremely embarrassing to have to urinate in public. Yet this is what I was forced to do after enduring a train journey from Clapham Junction and finding out via an onboard announcement that there were no working toilets on the train bound for Southampton. This was bad enough, but at least there would be some relief, literally, I thought, upon arriving at Winchester, whereupon I could make a quick dash for the toilets. Unfortunately, on alighting from the train, I discovered that the toilets shut at 8:30 p.m, 15 minutes before my train pulled in. So, what to do? I thought about getting a cab home, but feared I might disgrace myself while on the way, so I decided to walk. I live a 10-minute walk away. However, after a couple of minutes, I was forced to relieve myself on the path leading from the underground walkway to the bus stop on Stockbridge Road. Fortunately, there was no one about, but that's beside the point, which is, if there are no adequate facilities on a train, which is unacceptable on its own, surely the duty of a train station is to ensure the toilets are not shut for passengers requiring a toilet upon alighting. And there must have been many passengers desperate for a toilet on this particular train, which was full all the way from Clapham Junction." And that was from Marvin B. Naylor, Green Hill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Christopher Sharrett writes about a thing which is headlined "Entertaining." "Many thanks for Barry Sherlock's article about King Alfred in the Chronicle of October the 17th. His writing is always informative and entertaining. He rightly emphasises Alfred's importance as the champion of the Saxons against the Danes and of the English language and of Christianity. But in a post-Christian age, it's easy for us to underestimate the importance of religion in Alfred's time. It was not lost on the Victorians, who commissioned the statue of King Alfred in the Broadway. He is portrayed as a warrior with a helmet and shield and sword, but he does not hold his sword by the hilt and point it at the enemy. Instead, he holds his sword by its point and upright like a cross, the symbol of Christianity." Christopher Sharrett, Waverley Drive, South Wanston.
And Chris Higgins writes about need for control. "I was not convinced by your report, Vape Shop and NHS in Anti-Smoking Initiative Chronicle, October the 3rd, which spun a positive message on the industry. The plethora of vape shops in most town centres is attracting a new generation of teenagers to start smoking e-cigs with bubblegum-type fruit flavours and brightly coloured plaque packaging. There are reports that some of these vapes contain hidden addictive chemicals which could be more harmful than nicotine. So the idea that vaping is to be encouraged is rather misleading. The Vaporium shop may well be more responsible than some outlets, but vaping is still a scourge on our society. Although the NHS does issue vaping vouchers to those who wish to give up smoking, it would be far better to follow the lead from Australia, where vapes are only available on doctor's prescription. This would support those current smokers striving to give up, but also create proper controls on the industry to prevent a new generation being attracted to a way of life that damages their health and their wallets." Chris Higgins, Edgar Villas, Winchester.
Councillor Derek Mellor writes, "Council clarity. In response to your article reporting that Hampshire County Council will not have its accounts properly audited for 2022-23, I wish to reassure readers by providing further clarity. There is a huge backlog of local authority audits across the country, created in part due to delays during COVID and also due to some high-profile national issues around the valuation of infrastructure assets, such as roads. Neither of these issues is under the control of Hampshire County Council, which has produced and published its draft accounts in line with the legal timeframes throughout this period and, unlike many other authorities, has had all their accounts audited and signed off up to and including the 2021-22 financial year. While it's correct to say that Hampshire's accounts will not be properly audited for 2022-23, this is entirely down to national factors and does not reflect negatively on the County Council in any way. Past history shows that Hampshire has been consistently praised for its strong financial management and the quality of its accounts, receiving a clean bill of health every year for decades. Had a full audit therefore been possible, I have no doubt the same would have been the case for 2023. And that was from Councillor Derek Mellor, Chairman of the Hampshire County Council Audit Committee, the Castle, Winchester.
Edward Fennell writes, "Many congratulations are due to Mike Caldwell, Tim Fell and the late Sir Tony Walker for their persistence in overcoming many obstacles in driving forward the Cricket Pavilion, which is now due to be built in the North Walls Park in Hyde. It's been a triumph of dogged determination and energy. Maybe the City Council could now turn its attention to a much more modest building project, the restoration of the Grade One listed Hyde Gate, one of the last remains of Hyde Abbey, the burial place of King Alfred the Great. Since Hyde 900 was established in 2005, local people have been campaigning for the proper maintenance and modest development of this historic but scandalously neglected example of medieval architecture. What is more, with the recent designation of the adjacent St Bartholomew's Church, originally the lay chapel for the abbey, as the official start point for the Winchester to Southampton stage of the Camino Inglés, the pilgrim route to Santiago, there will be many more visitors to Hyde keen to understand the story of the abbey and the link to King Alfred. They will be disappointed if they're greeted by a building with stones falling from the walls, pigeon poo spewing from the roof, litter strewn around and a squalid floor surface, not to mention a completely missed opportunity for telling an important part of England's, let alone Winchester's, history. Surely we can't allow Hyde Gate to fall into complete decay. It wouldn't be cricket." Edward Fennell, founder of Hyde 900, Egbert Road, Hyde.
And Joss Crees says, "Save the wood." More than 30 councillors and an MP attended the climate emergency workshop in Winchester organised by Winchester Action on the Climate Crisis, WINAC, last week. There were clearly lots of ideas and demands for swift action. Yet so often our politicians seem to be hypocritical or out of touch on this topic. In Bishop's Waltham, for example, the latest housing development plans prioritise building on pristine native regenerated woodland to the north of Rare Ridge Lane. This woodland has grown up over more than 20 years from previous agricultural land and a former Christmas tree plantation. Now it supports probably one of the richest and most diverse habitats in the parish. Why, therefore, is it chosen as an ideal site for building houses? The consultation was minimal and hardly publicised. It supports a range of insects, mammals and invertebrates. It's hard to understand how the loss of a woodland can deliver a biodiversity net gain or protect and enhance the diversity of the natural environment as stated in the local plan. Let's do more than talk a good talk and change our habits, planning and policies to act for wildlife in an honest and meaningful way. We need to challenge our politicians on their inconsistency in the response to the climate emergency and environmental protection, especially in their planning decisions. That's from Joss Crease, Rareage Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
And Nick Adams King, who is the leader of Hampshire County Council, write, leaders reply. I've been compared to many things in my time, a clown, a numpty, and an idiot being some of the kinder ones. I have to admit the Chronicle's editorial last week comparing me to Joseph Stalin was a surprising first. There are, I grant you, some comparable features, the prodigious moustache being one. There is photographic evidence from this from the 80s, which also confirms that I once had hair. Long rambling speeches might also be a fair suggestion. Luckily enough, mass murder, torture, and elimination of any opponent don't seem to appear on my CV. Nor does Machiavellian manoeuvring to avoid facing the truth on HCC's saving proposals. In the world of council finance, if officers feel something should be considered, they'll bring it forward, leaving councillors to decide. That was the case with the proposals to close HWRCs, which is the recycling centres, to cut school crossing patrols, and end some homelessness grants, which we considered on October the 14th. Having brought the suggestions forward and consulted on them widely, we were obliged to follow the process through to its conclusion, which involved considering all 13 areas for savings at our Cabinet meeting, approving some, rejecting others. I am at one with Chronicle's concern over Hampshire's stagnating recycling figures. That's one of the reasons why I was determined we save the recycling centres. There's a better way for us to recycle, something we know is important to our residents that involves investment, cooperation and determination. I'm positive we can bring better recycling forward, indeed determined we do so, which brings me back to the comparison with Stalin. He showed determination too. And that's from Nick Adams King, the leader of the County Council.
Danger of absurd road redesign is the headline for this letter, and there's a photograph the writer sent in. It shows a strip of narrow pavement with a high wall on one side, and on the road on the other is a bus. And this photograph was taken by the writer when she was pressed up against the wall to take it because she felt unsafe. Judith Martin writes, Sue Wood is absolutely right to highlight the absurd design of the temporary traffic changes at the junction of Clifton Terrace and Romsey Road. Just after I'd read her letter, it's terrifying, she said, I watched a cyclist come along Clifton Terrace wanting to cross to St James's Terrace, which is supposedly what the arrangement is meant to encourage. The great rubber barrier swept her round to the right, alongside a car, which didn't leave her much room. Meanwhile, the generously laid out cycle lane coming down the hill and sweeping left into Clifton Terrace remained, as it invariably does, empty. Then the young cyclist crossed the road between the cars that had been stopped by the lights. Then, unlike Sue Wood, instead of swinging left to use the dropped curb, simply hopped up onto the pavement opposite. Just what I was told in my cycling proficiency lessons long ago, as it was not to do, because it's bad for the tyres. If the cyclist had instead wanted to turn down Romsey Road, the photo here shows what she would have encountered. I took it as a mere pedestrian pressed tight against the wall. Hampshire County Council, with this £500,000 scheme, is solving the wrong problem. It was never dangerous to turn left into Romsey Road, unlike the blind junction residents have to use now from Clifton Road into St Paul's Hill. The bridge over Romsey Road is simply too narrow for two lanes of traffic, especially when barely one in ten drivers keep to the 20-mile-an-hour limit there. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Next we have Chronicle Comment.
Right, more lorries set to plague villages. The villages of Twyford and Coldham Common are hoping to fight off a part of a proposal for major work at the nearby Hockley Golf Club. The club proposes a sustainable irrigation scheme which sounds all laudable, but the issue is that it would mean a large number of lorries going along the A3335 after dropping off tons of material at the golf course. The application has gone to the planning authority, which is the South Downs National Park. There have already been more than 30 objections and more than 80 letters of support. Planners at the park are currently considering the scheme before making a decision or sending it to the planning committee for councillors from across the national park to decide. The main issue is that the lorries carrying 130,000 cubic metres of material to the club will use the M3 which runs next to the course, but on exiting the club, dozens of HGVs every day will turn left and head south on the B3335 through the villages. Before the M3 was completed in 1994, the main road through Twyford and Colden Common was the A333 and saw a lot of heavy traffic. The A33 Winchester Bypass was an inadequate road and traffic often diverted onto the A333, blighting the lives of local people. It was one of the benefits of the completion of the motorway through Twyford Down that traffic would ease on the A333, now reclassified as the B3335. One has great sympathy for the villagers. There would appear to be an obvious solution. Make the lorries leaving the golf club turn right back onto the M3. This would be a longer route and thus more expensive, but it's not reasonable to have this as a planning requirement on any permission that is given.
And now, first person.
And that is Kimberly Barber, who is writing, "Great asset to the community. As we lugged rubble and swept leaves, the thought crossed my mind about just how much effort and work it must take to keep Unit 12 going. The community centre in Winnell has many rooms occupied by different groups or businesses. It's got halls, dance studios, a community pantry, cafe area, food bank and more, providing a base for many start-up businesses or organisations that help the community. We are at the Community Hub for our annual volunteering day, and as the sun is actually shining, we've taken the opportunity to tidy and prepare the garden for winter. Who knows, it might even be one of the last nice days of the year. The centre is run by Lara Tarrant, who juggles a million different balls to keep the place going. Its website says it's on a mission to create a volunteer-led, not-for-profit community hub to deliver positive social impact with a sustainable business model whose activities benefit the community through our family of like-minded organisations. As the focus is usually on the inside, keeping that ticking over and making sure all the many different groups and organisations that use it are happy, the garden can sometimes get a little overlooked. It's a really nice space too, with enough space for people to sit or children to play games, and an area with raised beds to grow vegetables. Down the side of the centre runs a path with veg beds on either side, and that's where we were helping to clear space for a new shed to be installed. Hopefully, Lara says, this will hold tools and equipment to make the garden more attractive to users and to help volunteers who diligently turn up every week to help keep it nice. We also help put together a compost bin, with the dream that food waste from the centre will also be recycled and turned into compost to be put back on the veg beds, a virtuous circle. We're joined by two other ladies who regularly volunteer at the centre. One says that she missed having a garden after downsizing to a flat, and when she saw that Unit 12 needed helpers, she jumped at the chance and has not looked back. She says that as well as a helping a good cause in the community, it's good for her mental health. It helps her to get some vitamin D and keeps her active. The other lady says she used to work in a rose nursery and has a passion for gardening, so was also only too happy to help out when she saw an ad looking for volunteers. We're there on a Friday, so the centre is busy, especially with food pantry customers who are helped by the centre's offer of £15 worth of food a week for the low price of £6. Elsewhere, people are coming in for dance classes, as the centre has a range of professional, high-quality studio rooms for hire from an affordable price of £15 an hour. People use them for classes, workshops, rehearsals, training, parties, meetings, seminars and more. Lara says they hope that people will start booking them for weddings soon too, especially as the garden becomes even lovelier. As we work sweeping leaves and generally tidying up, Lara comes out with a cake, handily donated at the pantry, and tea. She's been busy inside. One of the toilets needed attention, and a grant application needed writing, and two people needed showing round. There is not one minute that we see Lara sitting down. She's flitting between everything and everyone, making sure that everyone is happy. Unit 12 really does provide a great service for the Winchester community, a flexible community centre providing a space for all ages, abilities and walks of life to meet and learn or to develop new skills. We felt incredibly welcome at the centre and would recommend that if you have any spare time, then get in touch and see if you can lend a hand too.
And now we go continue with Belgarum.
And the first item is Oliver's Tales of Festival, with a picture of a smiling Oliver Gray and a smiling Robin Hitchcock in St Mary's Church in Twyford with a copy of Oliver's new book. Kate Stables, Andy Burrows, Robin Hitchcock, Frank Turner, Josh Savage, Christy T, Rosie Plain, the list of Winchester artists who've played at the South by Southwest Festival in Texas is long and honourable. Less well known is the role played by the Hampshire Chronicle in supporting and encouraging them. Twyford writer Oliver Gray's new book, Austin Healing, details 20 years of misadventures in the Texan capital while covering the iconic but unique festival for the Chronicle and other publications. Oliver's book was launched in early September at the city's Railway Inn. The book is entirely produced in Winchester, designed by Richard Williams and published by Sarson Press. www.olivergray.com/austin-healing. Oh, and the next item says Pantomime History Explored. Theatre Royal Winchester will host a show exploring the life of Panto Dames. An audience with Dame Lily Trot Twankey will take place on Sunday, November the 10th. As the theatre prepares for its pantomime, Mother Goose, the event will delve into the history and allure of pantomime dames. The show will be performed by Julian Eardley, the theatre's well-known panto dame, who will also play Mother Goose this festive season. An audience with Dame Lily Trot Twankey will start at 7:30 p.m. For more information or to book, call the Theatre Royal Winchester on 01962 840440. And there's a very pink and blue and glossy picture of Julian Eardley in full panto regalia with a troop of maidens attending him.
And now we continue with Letter from Westminster.
Yes, this is from Winchester MP Danny Chambers. It's now been just over 100 days since I was elected the MP for Winchester. When elected in July, I promised to fight for the issues that matter most to you. My number one priority has been to fight for our local A&E and consultant-led maternity services. We know that under the previous Conservative government's plan, services would move away from Winchester. Over and over on the doorstep, people told me how concerned they were for an elderly relative who might have to make a long journey to A&E in a rush hour traffic. That's why I've been raising these issues at every opportunity in Parliament. At Prime Minister's Questions, I challenged Keir Starmer and the new Labour government to guarantee the future of our local health services. While he acknowledged the importance of the issue, we did not get the guarantee we really needed. So I promised to keep fighting for answers. I've also been listening to health and social care workers across the constituency. I spent time visiting the almshouses at St John's and the Hospital of St Cross, speaking to the staff at Winchester Hospice, who work so hard to support people, often in heartbreaking circumstances, was deeply moving, and the staff there deserve our thanks for the outstanding job they do. I spent time visiting community pharmacies and will use my voice to fight for a fair deal from government and ensure pharmacists can stay open for the people of villages and towns relying on them. There are too many people, particularly in rural areas, who have to travel for miles to reach their nearest pharmacy, and I'll be fighting for better access for those people. Everyone deserves access to the treatments they need, no matter where they live. Mental health is deeply important to me, and as a former trustee of a mental health charity, it was a great honour to be appointed as Liberal Democrat spokesperson for this important issue. I recently visited the mental health unit based at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and spoke to both staff and patients. It's clear that the expert preventative care and interventions they're providing are saving the hospital so much money later on. In Parliament, I've been discussing an innovative collaboration with Melbury Lodge, a dedicated mental health facility at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and Winchester Citizens Advice, which dramatically improves recovery time for inpatients receiving treatment for mental health conditions. The project provides one-to-one advice and support to inpatients on matters relating to living in the community, from relationships and financial advice to management of debt, benefits and housing issues. Their research has shown huge success, finding that for every £1 invested in the project, they can save the NHS £14. At a time when the public finances are under pressure, successful projects like these should be rolled out across the whole country. I've been championing this local project in Parliament and asking the new Labour government to consider the great opportunity this could be if rolled out countryside. As we look ahead to the upcoming autumn budget, we must remember that critical investments in successful projects like this are going to save us so much more money in the future, and I want the project in Winchester to be seen as a model for success right across the UK. I'm pleased to announce that my new team in Winchester is now fully up and running, and they've already been making huge difference, listening to constituents and helping them with their concerns.
For your information, lighting up time ends on Friday the 25th of October at 7:43 a.m. and begins at 17:45 p.m. On Wednesday the 30th of October, it ends at 6:52 a.m. and begins at 16:36 p.m. A quick reminder that the clocks go back 1 hour at 2 a.m. on Sunday morning. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we continue with items of general news.
And here we have Room in Your Home and in Your Heart. Hampshire County Council celebrates Foster Focus Week 2024. Could you create special life-changing memories by fostering a vulnerable child? Hampshire County Council is renewing its call for nurturing foster carers this Foster Focus Week, the 21st to the 27th of October, which this year celebrates the precious moments and lasting memories shared by foster carers and the children in their lives. Foster Focus Week is the County Council's annual campaign recognising the vital role of foster carers and the need to find more loving, stable homes for children in care. It comes as the County Council joins forces with a coalition of councils and children's trusts across the country to launch a heartwarming new film entitled Everything, to promote local authority fostering. The film follows the memories of a foster carer as he celebrates his 60th birthday, surrounded by the people whose lives he has changed across the years, and as the title suggests, aims to highlight everything that fostering means to those involved. Across Foster Focus Week, the County Council will be sharing the memories and experiences of some of its incredible local foster carers. Beverly initially came to fostering through providing short-term respite care, before eventually becoming a full-time carer for children with complex needs. She says, The most rewarding thing is the children themselves. They bring so much laughter, so much fun. If you've got room in your heart and your house for another child, you should fill it. Linda started fostering 10 years ago and described the rewards of seeing each child thrive in her care. She says, each child is different and we adapt to what they need. It's a joy to see them grow into young people and move into independent living. Quite often they stay in contact, and so it's like an extended family. It is a really enjoyable experience. Foster carer Anthony has praised the support he receives from the county council, including through the Hampshire Hives, a network of local support groups for foster carers across Hampshire, each led by a dedicated support worker. He says, you've got social workers, you've got some wonderful hives that provide an additional layer of support. Just as important is all the training that you're given, which really helps you to build your skills and so make a big difference for the children. Anyone aged over 21 and from all walks of life can become a foster carer. The only requirement is a spare room and, of course, plenty of patience, resilience, open-mindedness and positivity. There are many types of arrangements available, from full-time fostering to more flexible options that fit around home and work-life commitments. Hampshire County Council Fostering Service are also hosting a special in-person Q&A event in November. Join them on the 26th of November at Crofton Community Centre from 5 o'clock onwards in Fareham and have all your questions answered, courtesy of their friendly recruitment team and some of their remarkable foster carers. And this is accompanied by three photos. One, a lovely photo of a carer in the sea, right up to her knees in water and wearing a dress with a little boy, and they're looking, he's got a net in his hand and she's pointing and they're looking forward very seriously at something he's going to try and catch. And another of a lady reading a book with a little boy on a bench in a park. And one of a young child in a huge wheelchair laughing and enjoying a cup of drink with his two foster carers, clearly at home.
No plans for bus service shake-up, says council. The City Council confirmed that it has no intention of following national plans to franchise bus services across Hampshire, since the area is not suitable due to its rurality. The Labour government's proposal aims to give more powers to local councils, so they have the ability to run their own bus services for the first time since 1986. With the move, local councils across the country would be allowed to introduce a franchising system to decide routes, timetables and fares, with operators bidding to run services for a fixed fee. Transport Minister Simon Lightwood said, "Enough is enough," over the country's declining bus services. However, despite welcoming the initiative, the County Council said the franchising model is better suited to large cities and less for largely rural local authority areas like Hampshire, and so there are no plans to introduce the system at present. A spokesperson for Hampshire County Council said, while we welcome the government's plan to give local transport authorities the opportunity to run bus services, we have no plans to apply for a franchise at the present time. Large metropolitan areas often have significant bus operator competition, leading to inefficiency and duplication, which then requires some form of regulation through franchising. In Hampshire, we don't have that problem, since the services that bus operators run across the county do not overlap very much, if at all, in the areas they cover.
Popular pub to reopen with lower prices. A Hampshire Village pub will reopen this month under new ownership. The Old George is the latest in a series of purchases of Hampshire country pubs made by local publican Jonathan Spencer, who runs the hospitality company Taste the World. He also owns the Rising Sun in Coldon Common, the March Hare in Hairstock, and the Hunters in Romsey, the last of which is undergoing refurbishment. Mr. Spencer has also just handed on the running of the Dolphin in Hursley, which he had been leasing, to another landlord. On the Old George's Facebook page, he posted the following: "We're thrilled to announce that the Old George is under new ownership, and we couldn't be more excited to share this journey with you. Mr. Spencer also gave details of his plans. Yes, live music will absolutely continue. We're currently finalising details with the already booked bands, and we'll share information soon on how to apply for future dates. Keep an eye out for our upcoming post with all the details. The pub doors will open again this Sunday, and of course the famous meat raffle will still be on. You'll also notice some changes, including a reduction of prices across the board. For the first couple of months, not a great deal will be changing other than the above price point. And we will be bringing in an improved match-ready grey speed cloth table, like you will find in our other pubs. Looking ahead, we'll be closing in January for a full refurbishment, including a complete redevelopment of the kitchen. Thank you for the warm welcome we've received so far. We're excited to meet everyone and introduce you to your new landlord, Julian, very soon.
And here we have comedic and chaotic play. Theatre fans are set for a comedic, chaotic radio play experience at the Theatre Royal Winchester. Odd Socks Productions will present Roger, that's R.O.G.E.R. Roger Radio Attempts Frankenstein on Tuesday, October the 29th. This award-winning company, celebrating 35 years, is known for adapting classics like A Midsummer Night's Dream and Much Ado About Nothing. In this new show, audiences will follow a charming radio company performing the horror classic Frankenstein, despite losing their sound effects creator, dealing with unruly props and actor rivalry. The story takes the audiences from an ice-bound sailing ship to a science lab featuring a wedding, death and destruction as Victor Frankenstein creates and then rejects his monster. The show pays tribute to the golden age of radio, with all the actors playing multiple characters, promising adventure, coordinated chaos and comic timing. A spokesperson, Theatre Royal Winchester, Roger Radio Attempts Frankenstein will appeal to audiences who want to enjoy the adventure of the original story, Frankenstein, while being swept up by the coordinated chaos of the show and the comic timing of the performers. The performance will begin at 7 p.m. And for more details and to book tickets, visit Theatre Royal Winchester or the box office on 01962 840 440.
Judge gives farmer a suspended sentence. A Hampshire farmer who was cleared of manslaughter after the case against him collapsed has been handed a suspended sentence for two separate charges. Wearing a grey jumper and a checked shirt, Philip Tickner, aged 63, of Upper Lanham, did not react as Mr Justice Edie sentenced him to a six-month suspended sentence over a period of a year and a half for health and safety breaches. Tickner had also been charged with manslaughter after his employee, Philip France, fell through the roof of a cowshed while working and died. But this was voided after an expert witness gave evidence about the collapse. During sentencing, the judge took into account Tickner's character references and said, "Having read all the character references on your behalf, it is clear you are a good man who made a terrible mistake." She added, "In your case, I take into account the punishment you have already suffered." Mrs. Justice Edie also described the dynamics of the day Mr. Francis died, when Tickner had trusted another experienced employee, Paul Daubeny, to ensure his colleague's safety. He said, "I accept that you believe that Mr. Daubeny was well aware of the equipment and the safety measures available, and you assumed Mr. Daubeny would institute a safe system of work while removing the shed roof. You were wrong. Simply describing the work carried out makes clear the obvious risks from stumbling, slipping or tripping. The fact that this unsafe process was being carried out ought reasonably to have alerted you to the absence of safeguards." There's a picture of a large, grey, really derelict building with the roof just seems to be balanced on top of the walls, which is clearly the site of this fall. The farmer had previously pleaded guilty to two health and safety charges in relation to the death of Mr. France, who was 57 when he fell to his death in June 2021 while dismantling a roof on Tickner's family-run farm at Upper Lanham near Old Alsford. A statement by Mr. France's sister was read out during Prosecutor Mark Watson's KC's summary. Joanna Cresswell, who was watching the sentencing via video link, told how her brother, a farm contractor, was popular in the area around Alsford and spent his free time socialising in the local pub. She said he'd go out of his way to help anyone who needed him, and also recounted the experience of her other brother, Nick, when he saw Philip in hospital after the 3-metre fall. Seeing your brother on a life support machine with a very worrying prognosis is something you hope not to have to do. Mitigating Miss Malcolm Galloway said, Mr. Tickner was devastated at the death of someone he regarded as a friend, and that was plain when he gave his evidence. The trial began on October the 3rd and ended on October the 18th.
Vigilance call over courier scam. Winchester residents are being urged to be vigilant following numerous reports of suspected courier fraud attempts in the area. Police have received 7 reports of the scam since Thursday, October the 10th. In the majority of cases, the fraudsters have claimed to be police officers from either the local area or from London. They claim that the victim's account has been subjected to fraudulent activity. Victims are then asked to help with the investigation and provide financial details or go to a bank to withdraw money to be picked up later by a courier. A police spokesman said, fortunately, in these 7 cases, no money was handed over. Those called either realised it was a scam and reported the call to us, or as in one case, bank staff have intervened when a victim attempted to withdraw money. We are urging people not to engage with this type of call. While anyone can be a victim, often elderly people are targeted, and officers are asking anyone with an elderly relative, loved one, friend or associate to please make them aware of this scam. If you or someone you know has been a victim of fraud, report it to the police by calling 101. If a crime is in progress, dial 999.
Here we have Buddy Scheme Plan for School. A Winchester councillor has a plan to tackle clashes between residents and parents taking their children to school on a new estate. The Chronicle reported on trouble between people unhappy about parents parking in residents' parking area because of congestion outside Barton Farm Primary Academy. Parents have been blocked in, nails placed under car tyres, and been subjected to aggressive behaviour. Local City Councillor Jackie Porter said, none of us wants bad feeling between parents and residents, and certainly I don't want children to face aggressive adults or bad language on their way to school. She said in recent days she has spoken to the school head and chairman of governors and Carla Holmes, which is building the new King's Barton estate. Her ideas are a buddy scheme where a parent who is a resident acts as a host for 20 minutes for a parent coming from further away in a car, more use of breakfast club for an early drop-off, more use of parking spaces in Fishick Road, a legitimate visitor space only a few minutes from the school. Carla has said it will open a foot and buggy path from Fishick Road available direct to school in the new year, but will try to get it open at Christmas. Carla has said it will mark the private parking spaces to make it clearer where parents can park. Councillor Porter said, I'm encouraging the school to make sure parents understand the school travel plan. It was a requirement for Barton Farm School to have one in place within a year after opening. I will continue to work with the school on this as we know the population of the school will change over the years. In the long term, the problem will disappear as a neighbourhood centre is to be built which will include a public car park close to the school. Councillor Porter said, as I said at the King's Barton Forum, this was expected to be a short-term problem, but the short term isn't so short in the life of a child and parent, and Carla understands that too. I'm hoping that we can build back the relationship between the residents and the visitors. King's Barton is now truly part of Winchester, and as more visitors arrive, we can see that it isn't exclusively for King's Barton residents. One parent, Karen Rowlandson, said, "I totally agree that private parking should be labelled ASAP so that parents know where they can park. I feel that this would have alleviated some of the tension from the start, but still does not excuse some residents choosing violence."
Fireworks set to light up the sky. Fireworks Night is back, with the 66th annual event being held by Winchester Round Table. On Saturday, November the 9th, a torchlight procession will illuminate the streets of Winchester, culminating at North Walls Park in a spectacular bonfire and fireworks display. I don't know whether there will be bangs, but perhaps it's, if you live near there, it might be helpful to remember that Saturday, November the 9th, is there going to be bonfires and fireworks in North Walls. The event is a family-friendly and organised entirely by volunteers from the Winchester Round Table Bonfire Committee, as well as 41 Club and Ladies' Circle. Their efforts ensure that all profits go directly to local charities, providing much-needed financial support throughout the year. Ticket prices are frozen for 2024, with discounted tickets available throughout October. 2023 was a record-breaking year, raising tens of thousands of pounds for local charities, including Winchester Youth Counselling, Winchester Street Reach, Winchester Radio, Winchester Pregnancy Crisis Centre, The Nutshell, Winchester Penguins, Hampshire Hornets and Wheelchair Basket Club. And tickets can be purchased online or from the round table at the High Street stand every Saturday from now.
Detectorist Mike's Roman Treasure, an extremely rare silver denarius of the Roman Emperor Carausius, was expected to fetch up to £8,000 when it came up for auction. The coin was discovered in June by Mike Clark, 73, in a field in South Brougham in Somerset. Mr. Clark from Wimborne, Dorset, said, "It was on June the 9th that I attended an organised dig with around 20 detectorists on some pasture fields at South Brougham. Using my XP Deus 1 metal detector, which I've had for many years, nothing was found in the morning, but in the afternoon, on another field, my first signal was a £1 coin. The next signal revealed, at a depth of 6 inches, a silver coin. I recognised it immediately as a denarius of the Roman Emperor Carausius. I then contacted the local founds liaison officer, said it could be properly recorded. The coin was expected to fetch between 6,000 and 8,000 when it was sold at auction in Noonan's Mayfair this week. Nigel Mills, coins and artefact specialist at Noonan's, said, "The coin, which was never published, features a laureate bust of the usurper Carausius, who commanded the Roman fleet Classis Britannica, based in the English Channel. In AD 286, the Emperor Maximian ordered his execution after Carausius was suspected of concealing treasure captured from pirates. Carausius then declared himself Emperor of Britain and Northern Gaul, making Britain an independent state. For this, he is sometimes regarded as the first Brexiteer. The coin features a radiate lion holding a thunderbolt. The letters RSR appear before the lion, which are the abbreviation for Rodeant Saturnia Regna, from the poet Virgil's Eclogues, meaning the kingdom of Saturn returns. Carausius is hinted at a return to a golden age through his leadership. Carausius was murdered 7 years later by his finance minister, Alectus." Politics now. "Mr. Clark, a retired commercial fisherman who has been metal detecting for 52 years, will share the proceeds of the auction with the landowner." And there's a picture of this rare silver coin with an extremely grumpy looking emperor picture on it. And a picture of retired builder Paul Capewell, who discovered the silver coin, issued by the Emperor Trajan in AD 107, also for auction by Noonan's this week. And he's out in the field with his, his, what was it, metal detector. anyway.
And here we have South East Hants Young Farmers Tractor Run. Tractors hit the streets. Tractors took over the roads to delight crowds and raise money for two good causes. On Saturday, October the 19th, dozens of young farmers travelled across the county in their tractors in the name of charity. This year, the South East Hants Young Farmers Tractor Run raised money for guide dogs and for Rowan's Hospice, with all the money raised split evenly between the two charities. Starting at Bishop's Waltham, crowds lined the streets to cheer the young farmers on and admire the tractors on display. Claire Gregory, mum of organiser Thomas, chair of the South East Hants Young Farmers, said, "The High Street is as busy as it would be for Carnival Day. Every year the turnout is always as good. People are even messaging in August to find out when it's going to be. It is a great event." Paul Perkis, with Dexter 5 and Poppy 7 and local resident Sylvia Stiles, were out in Bishop's Waltham to see the spectacle. Dexter and Poppy were collecting donations as their dad Stephen Carpenter drove one of the tractors. Paula said, "Oh, we're going to be at several of the stops to collect as much money as we can. It is a great event." Also admiring the tractors was Penelope Inglesby from Kestrel Close with her husband Paul and the dog Douglas. She said, "I think it's absolutely lovely. It's a lovely annual event for charity. Everybody gets quite excited about it and the whole community comes out." After driving through Bishop's Waltham, the young farmers travelled through Wickham, Southwick, Denmead, Hambledon, East and West Meon before coming to an end at Caffeine and Machine, which sounds more like a coffee shop than a village, possibly, at the A32-A272 crossroads at approximately 2:30 p.m. And this is accompanied by Dexter and Poppy setting out to collect their money, to raise the money, and a lot of very attractive, clearly cleaned for the event and colourful tractors driving down through the streets in the village.
Do you need to get more, or are you okay?
No, I'm fine.
Railway Line's Halloween Transformation. A popular Hampshire railway line will be transformed for Halloween. The Watercress line will be hosting its Wizard Week from October the 26th until November the 3rd. This will see its trains and four stations packed with gruesome activities and enchanting adventures for visitors to enjoy. People can board the Wizard Express and travel through the stations as much as they like. The horrifying highlights will include a lurid laboratory where people can make their own slime. They can go to circus skills workshops and enjoy twice daily magic shows. There'll be a daily fancy dress competition for people to take part in. The Waterline CEO, Rebecca Daly, said, "This year's Wizard Week dares to scare with gory fun for everyone. We look forward to welcoming wise wizards, little witches and plenty of other crazy characters to the Watercress line. Book your tickets online and don't miss out on the Halloween magic." And there's a picture of two little girls, one wearing those wonderful pigtails on wire so that they stick out either side of your head. And they're both clutching, oh dear, those orange fruit that you cut.
Pumpkins.
Thank you, Jane. They're both clutching pumpkins and they're on the platform, obviously anticipating all the lovely things that are going to happen. Their visitors will be able to stop at the footbridge where the scenes from a Harry Potter film were shot, and there'll be a chance for people to meet creatures at Ropley, craft their own wand and listen to stories.
A classical Christmas. A festive celebration is set to take place at Winchester Cathedral. The Wainfleet Singers, under the direction of Andrew Lumsden, will perform at the Cathedral on Sunday, December the 7th. The concert, titled A Classical Christmas, will also see English Chamber Orchestra accompany the singers. The event will showcase a blend of classical and seasonal music, aiming to get audiences into the Christmas spirit. Two choral masterpieces will feature in the evening's programme, Beethoven's Mass in C, celebrated for its expressive and uplifting qualities, and Bach's Washer Auf, Sleepers Wake, an Advent cantata known for its lyrical beauty and joy. Alongside these renowned choral works, attendees can also look forward to singing traditional Christmas carols with the opportunity to sing and join in the festive spirit. Andrew Lumsden, who recently stepped down from his role as Director of Music at Winchester Cathedral, will lead the concert. His departure was met with sadness by many in the choral community. The Wainfleet Singers expressed their delight at his return to the cathedral, where his experience and passion are sure to elevate the performance. A quartet of acclaimed soloists will also join the event, lending their voices to the compositions of Beethoven and Bach. The concert offers a harmonious mix of classical brilliance and festive tradition, featuring celebrating the rich heritage of choral music.
And now Couples Rum, all set to hit the market. A £2 million distillery boasting rum sold in the Savoy in London will soon open its doors. The rum is being created, taste-tested and sold from the distillery in Parham Drive. Described as the Nando's of the rum industry, the premium brand was created by Swanmore couple Nicole and Carl Churchill, who have never foraged into the world of alcohol before. But both were driven to try something new that would benefit Eastleigh and the wider Southampton area. "We've no experience in this field. We saw the opportunity, we went for it," Carl said. Carl said the rum market is very competitive, but he and Nicole have something that sets them apart. He said, "We are one of the few rum distilleries in the UK who can make everything from scratch. We make our rum using yeast and molasses and water straight from Southampton. We're wanting to make 1 million bottles a year." Nicole and I spent £2 million of our own cash on the distillery, and we chose this site as we only live in Swanmore. Plus, being in Eastleigh means it's well connected to the motorway and Southampton's port. There'll be about 25 people working for us here by the end of the year, which includes people from the area. Nicole added, "We have a fantastic team and there are some amazing people in Southampton we've recruited. There's a great talent pool in the city and surrounding area, and we're very focused on investing locally." Driven by a love for local and sustainability, the pair want to shake up the world of rum as we know it. The distillery not only makes rum, but environmentally conscious choices too. Carr said, "Sustainability is a big part of our business. We recycle rainwater. We hope to have solar energy installed this year, and 100% of our electricity is renewable. And some of our gas is generated from grass. The V-team even use leftover sugar cane to make labels for the rum." Carl and Nicole hope the refit of the distillery will be completed by the end of November. The pair recently took a delivery of large alcohol fermentation machines, meaning they will have 24,000 litres of fermenting capacity. The distillery is also home to a custom-made alcohol distiller shipped from Germany and a smaller version. The equipment helps Carl and Nicole to create their rum, which has so far proved popular via online and business sales. Carl said, "We've already been sold at the Savoy in London. We will be appearing in grocery stores and airlines and trains in the future. To make pure rum, you can only use yeast, molasses and water. If you add any flavour, it becomes a rum-style spirit. But a lot of the flavour is created from the method of distillation. The flavour will carry through the process. We do two types of distilling, one which is pot to get good taste and strength. We have to make a great liquid, and it's all about the process, which is very scientific. Our head distiller often uses test tubes in his work. He's from Wales and comes down here to work on a Monday and returns home on a Thursday. He's done this for more than a decade." Nicole and Carl are keen to make themselves and their brand known in Eastleigh and the wider Southampton area, but since selling their rum online, the feedback has been positive. Carl said, "Well, we're not big drinkers ourselves, unless, of course, we're drinking our own product. V currently sells three types of rum: premium white rum at £24.99 a bottle, overproof white rum $32.99 a bottle, and a spiced rum. And Nicole and Chris are also working on a fleet of mobile bars, which they can take around the country. This is accompanied by a picture of their very attractive bottles, not just ordinary bottles, but very pretty in different colours, grey, orangey brown, and a purple one.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors for selecting the extracts this week and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. Our thanks to our readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Steve Russell, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.